Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
D-Mace, Fingen and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Fingen here with you. Kevin is on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Kevin, thank you for calling. Thank you for waiting. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I wanted to talk about the analysis of Levis. Seems like I hear a lot of contradiction, especially from Jared, but saying, you know, everybody thinks we have the worst offensive line in history. And our receivers, they don't seem to get any separation. And when they do, they drop the ball. But everything falls on Levis. And I don't understand how it can all be on him. I mean, early in the year, he made some bonehead decisions and bad passes and other things. But now he seems like he's settling in. He's getting where the game is coming to him a little bit better, makes some better decisions. But yet, I mean, everybody, even national radio, but especially 102.5 says we have the worst O-line ever. But I don't think that any quarterback that you bring in, especially the ones that are going on free agent, we will see the worst of them if they were to start with our existing offensive line. And I wanted to see what you thought about that.
Thanks for the call, Gavin.
Okay, let's start with the worst O-line ever. I'm not here to compare them to, you know, the early 90s Cowboys or the old Hogs or anything. But I think the line is better than it was last year. I think the right tackle has been a huge disappointment. But I think they've made some modest gains, right? They're not a good offensive line at all, but they're not the worst line ever. I think the sack rate, and Barnwell points this out in the article that we've referenced today, the sack rate is a lot on Levis. It is. I hate to say it. He's not getting a lot of help, but I do think the offensive line has taken some steps forward in some areas.
Yeah, they've listen. That right side is a island in itself. That's by itself. You know, I don't know.
And do we think Raiden's at guard has been a decent success story?
Yeah, he's been better than what I expected. He hasn't been. If they had a better right tackle, I think you wouldn't notice Dylan Raiden's. And that's what we want. We don't want to notice our offensive linemen. We just want them to do their job and go about their business. So I think if you had a better situation at right tackle, it would be better for Dylan Raiden's. Their offensive line is not good. They can be better. Are they what they were last year? No, they're not. But are they where they need to be? No, they're not. But this is what I think the caller has to understand. And this is why, and Willie said it earlier, listen, the nature of the position is sometimes you're going to get too much praise for the job you did, and sometimes you're going to get too much of the blame for the job that wasn't done. But I think what people got to understand is this. We talked last week about Will Levis being last game was the least amount of times he was pressured. And it still didn't lead to him playing winning football. He still had bad throws. He still had missed throws. He still didn't read the field properly the way he should have read it. So you can't, you know, put that on the offensive line. When the offensive line, you know, do their job within the play that was designed at that particular juncture of the game, if the offensive line is doing their job for that moment, Will Levis needs to be doing his job too. There has to be a point where this young quarterback in Will Levis, he has to take advantage of the opportunities when they're there all the time. And he hasn't done that. He hasn't done it consistently. So when the offensive line is giving you an opportunity to throw the football and you're still not finding the open guy, then that's a you problem. That's on Will Levis. That's not on the offensive line. That's why I said it's been too much inconsistent play with Will Levis when the offensive line was good and when it was bad. It's just been inconsistent on his part. The quarterback is supposed to uplift everything. They are. Whether you believe it or not, the quarterback is supposed to uplift everyone. That's why they get paid the most. And when it doesn't happen on any level, that's where you got to decide, is he our guy or isn't he? Because it's not always going to be perfect. I need a quarterback that when it's not perfect, he finds the perfection in it somehow, some way, and he makes a play within that. And Will Levis hasn't been able to do that consistently.
One texter says,
"Can I introduce one other element to this that I don't think we've discussed as much as we probably should, and that is the running game. That last year, just the presence of Derrick Henry, right, changes the defense as we talked about year in and year out. And now, even though Tony Pollard is a good, steady pro, nobody is game planning for the Titans' running game." And I don't think it's been as productive as they hoped it would be. You know, it's not like Pollard has been a disaster. He's a hard worker. But if you look at key efficiency stats, right, and I'm looking at FTN Fantasy right now, Pollard grades very low. And we know Tajay Spears has had a big, big disappointment in terms of staying healthy. And when he's been on the field, he's done virtually nothing. I've been really disappointed that Spears hasn't turned into something else. I was very hopeful for him. And that hasn't helped Will Levis, you know, in any way, shape, or form either, other than, you know, a decent game here or there from Pollard. But Pollard is nowhere close to Derrick Henry, right? And it's a different type of thing. It's a different system that they're running. But I think that's part of it. I think they were hoping to have more support from the running game and the running backs as receivers, and it really hasn't happened.
One texter says that he wouldn't play Madden with the Titans offensive line. Well,
I mean, I guess you don't play with the Titans then. No. You're playing Madden, if that's the case.
Unless you're in franchise
When I used to play back in the day, or Tecmo Bowl, and because I wasn't very good, I would take the loaded team, like Joe Montana and the 49ers, and my buddy who had the game mastered, right? He would take the scrub teams, right? Like the Titans this year. And that was the game. Could he beat me? I had the best guys. He had the worst guys. You know, he had the Colts with Jack Trudeau quarterbacking and stuff like that. And that was the game.
Yeah, but and we also, you know, talked earlier about, you know, how do you, and this sort of goes in line to, you know, Will Levis and his lack of production or whatnot. What I said about the Cincinnati Bengals, I think rings true about, you know, this team in general. If you want to beat Cincinnati, you got to run the football, and you got to be committed to running the football, which keeps your team on the field for a long, long, long periods of time. they had a chance to win that Jacksonville game. They ran the football consistently, and they stuck with it, and they ate up the clock. But they couldn't score once they got down there, and that's what you talk about, Willie. If you're going to take up time, you need to end it with 6 points and an extra point for seven. You don't need to end it with 3 points, because you end it with 3 points with a guy like Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins, they're going to come back and they're going to score seven on you, and you're down already. So, to me, they can help Will. They can continue to help Will Levis, and I think this is what Brian Callahan has been trying to do. But he hasn't had the consistency at the running back position in regards to health either. I think Pollard has been consistent the whole season. I think him, like Derrick Henry, was just working with what he has in front of him. Now, Derrick Henry is a different back, so you're going to get a different result. Pollard is still getting results, but they're not like a Derrick Henry result. Derrick Henry can get hit behind the line of scrimmage and still get you 3 or 4 yards. Pollard may get hit by a line of scrimmage and get you 2 yards. It's still positive, but it's not Derrick Henry. But what they got to continue to do is run the football, and I think that's what Brian Callahan wants to do. And that's what he probably didn't do at the beginning of the season. He put a lot of emphasis on Will Levis and him and it being his team, and we saw how that fared for the Titans. And I think now since he's come back from injury, they've said, no, we're going to do this a different way. We're going to run the football, but we got to be committed and stick to the run and give Will Levis 19 to 25 opportunities to throw the ball down the field. Anything more than that, we're losing. Or we're going to lose the game, or we're losing at that moment.
I think the one thing that's impressed me most about Tony Pollard's production this season is the amount of times he's hit behind the line of scrimmage. Like, he for the amount of yards that he has, and he has 937 rushing yards this season, considering, I mean, I know there is a stat for this, I just can't find it quickly enough, but I remember reading actually after the game last week that Pollard was contacted behind the line of scrimmage on just 19% of his carries against the Jaguars, which was the lowest rate in a game this season. So he is constantly being contacted behind the line of scrimmage and has been able to reel off some impressive runs. So is he Derrick Henry? Absolutely not. He's not Derrick Henry. But I've been impressed by his production relative to the fact that the offensive line hasn't given him much room to maneuver.
But it's not Tony Pollard's fault, but he is who he is. Mm-hmm. At this stage, he is a guy that he doesn't move the needle with the game.
He's
plan.
A shared like back. That, he's a shared back guy.
And if you want to look at counting stats, he's going to have his third straight 1,000-yard rushing season. But as we know, like, that's not what it's about. It's not. It's like you're talking about with the defense. It's not just the yards you get. It's what's happening on every play. His success rate. You know, how is he helping in the receiving game? And it's not needle moving kind of stuff. And I don't think that they expected him to be that big. The bigger disappointment is Spears not complimenting him. I think Pollard has done about what they hoped he would do. He's been a good, solid pro. He does the job. But Spears was the guy I hoped was going to take a big step forward, and you were going to talk about explosive plays and a threat. And things like that. So the running game as a whole in trying to replace Derrick Henry has been a major step back. And the offensive line has something to do with it, et cetera. But I'm not sure we've talked about that much. Because if you look at Tony Pollard, 213 carries, 937 yards, you're like, okay, that's not bad. He had a nice game last week. He's a good guy. He works hard. He's out there every week. He hasn't been hurt. But it's not the same thing as what they have had the last 5, 6, 7 years when they've had an ultra weapon back there.
But I don't think anyone expected Tony Pollard to come in and be Derrick Henry. I think what they wanted Tony Pollard to come in and do is to run the way he had been running in Dallas, physical between the tackles, and give us a little bit, you know, from a third down standpoint as far as catching the ball out the backfield. Pollard, to me, is one of those guys that plays 13 years, 14 years, and ends up with 1,300 yards rushing, and you look 13,000 yards rushing, excuse me, and you look at him like, how did he do that? But his consistency is what it's all about. Pollard is consistent. He may not give you what Derrick Henry can give you, and not many backs can do that. But what he does is he's a steady force. He's consistent. If you give him the ball, he's consistent. He's going to get you yardage, and he's going to be able to do the things you need to do. Is he going to be Derrick Henry and stiff arm five people and on the way to running 99 yards for a touchdown? No, he's not going to be that guy. But what he is he's one of those old school guys. Just give me the ball, coach, and eventually I'm going to keep chugging away, and eventually I'm going to break one. He's one of those guys, again, plays 13, 14 years, and you look like, man, he got 13,000 yards, averaging 4 yards per carry. Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I'll just tell you that in the Aaron Schatz FTN fantasy numbers, the old Football Outsiders, the efficiency, and this is maybe more of a reflection of the whole offense and not just the individual, and this could be cruel. I don't think it passes the eye test. I think he's better deserving of these grades here, but he grades among the lowest in the league who have carried the ball a significant amount of time. He grades about 30% below average in the rates. I think that's unfair, but it's just perspective on you have to look deeper into the numbers, because I do think it looks better in the eye test than the efficiency, but the overall offense is very inefficient, as we know.
You mentioned success rate, Willie, which is a way to indicate a running back's ability to keep the offense on schedule among qualified rushers, and this also includes quarterbacks as well. There are 42 qualified rushers. He ranks 31st in success rate at 35.7%. By comparison, Derrick Henry, I just lost him, Derrick Henry ranks 10th in the NFL at 45%. Since we mentioned Derrick Henry, I just wanted to use that as a comparison.
Well, it's hard to compare Derrick Henry or anybody to Derrick Henry. I don't care what back it is.
You know what I'll do? I'm going to go back and look at what Derrick Henry's success rate was last season with the Tennessee Titans.
See, for example, and this
it wasn't
this
great.
But he was at 37.1% last season. So I just said 45% with the Ravens, 37.1%. So he's roughly this. Derrick Henry last season, in terms of success rate, easy for me to say, was roughly the same as Tony Pollard this season.
And it's the line that. but here's what I'm saying about Tony Pollard. He's one of those guys that, because he's not flashy and he doesn't pop off all these great runs, that people tend to forget about. This guy's been playing, six seasons or five seasons, going on six?
Thereabouts.
Yeah, six. This would be a sixth season. He has 5,000 yards, averaging close to 5,000 yards, averaging 4.7 yards per carry. You wouldn't have thought of it when you think about Tony Pollard. He's just one of those guys that do his job. He do it consistent. It's not a wow every year, but he's consistent, and you know exactly what you're going to get out of him. And maybe they need a guy that's like a wild card. Like, he's going to give you that one run hitter. He may give it to you, but you know you got it in him.
That's where Spear.
Yeah.
That's where Spears has not been what they hoped. Let me correct what I said, because I was off on my numbers. I was looking at his receiving totals. Pollard as a receiver has not graded out well. Minus 30% below average. Pollard as a runner is more close to league average, minus 1%. So he's right at league average, so not needle moving. And the thing that you can't quantify when you compare it to Henry is, how do you game plan for Henry? How do you game plan for Pollard? It's probably two different things, for sure. So Pollard, steady, no question, but the impact of the Titans running game as a whole, when you combine Pollard and Spears as runners and receivers, because remember, that was a big part. They wanted to use the receivers as running backs, which is something that Henry really didn't bring to the table. It just hasn't been, I think, what they hoped. It's another thing on top of all of the other things that they envisioned for this offense that hasn't really come around.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans. Tony Pollard, Will Levis, whatever you'd like. On our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. But coming up next, it's Friday. It's almost 12:30, which means it's time for Ask D-Mace. So get your questions in now at 615-737-1025. Call us, text us, anything you want to know from Derek Mason. You can do that. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingen, 1025-1063, The Game. Ask D-Mace.
G-Maze.
He played 15 years in the NFL.
A quick throw. Derek Mason.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards.
Midfield, and there he goes. 80 yards for the touchdown.
And now you can ask him anything. Have a question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now,
D-Mace.
On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
It's time for Ask D-Mace on D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, 615-737-1025. Get your questions in for Derek now. On our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Let's do it.
Anything you want, within reason. Mm-hmm. I do screen these questions. We don't want to get inappropriate.
Never.
But if you have any questions for Derek about football, about life, about whatever, you can get them in now at 615-737-1025. Well, let's start with this from Justin from Greenbrier on our text line. Justin, would love to know, Derek, mm-hmm. what's your favorite thing about Christmas season? Other than Lifetime or Hallmark movies.
Yeah, other than Lifetime or Hallmark movies, just family. Just being, you know, having, you know, another, you know, opportunity, another year with the family. It's not so much at this age for me and for my children. It's not so much about gifts, even though, you know, they have a few things that they want. I think it's just about, you know, the time spent now. So that's what I really enjoy. About Christmas, the trying to get presents, that stresses me out. So, you know, I'm happy that my kids are older now. But just trying to get presents when they're younger, man, it stresses you out big time. So
you're telling me.
Exactly.
I'm absolutely. Dealing with that right
so
now.
You know.
I'm with you.
Yeah. So for me, it's just family, you know, and Hallmark movies.
And Hallmark movies. One thing that kids these days, they just don't get. Mm-hmm. Because now you can just order everything online. There was a time on Black Friday. It wasn't even Black Friday yet. It was Thanksgiving evening. You'd eat your dinner, and then you'd go camp out outside of the big box store mm-hmm. so that you could get in when the Black Friday deal started. And you had to run to the aisle to make sure that what you wanted was there. Now you can just put it in your Amazon gift card. You know, Amazon shopping cart, and you don't even need to worry about it.
Exactly. I remember one, like Black Friday, we were at Walmart, and they literally just saw people just like slinging off all the wrapping paper in this, like for these towels that were on sale. It was insane how bad it was.
People really want towels.
At that time, that's
Willie,
what they
I'm
want.
Sure you and your wife have been empty nesters. I'm sure you'll be happy to have your children home for the holidays.
Oh, for sure. It is. As the kids get older, it does completely change the dynamic of what you have to do as opposed to when they're young and you're trying to coordinate all of the angles, you know, stockings and what's the big gift and what's, you know, how do we balance between the two kids? It can be stressful for mm-hmm. sure.
Yes. We've done all of our Christmas shopping. You know, my goal is to make sure that my son's attention is kept by all of these toys for more than a couple of minutes at a time. It's hard to do when you're 3 years old, but we'll try our best. Jerry is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, with a question for Derek. Jerry, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
D-Mace, will we ever see you run for office? And if so, what office would you run for?
Okay. Thanks, Jerry. Will you ever run for office?
Nah, I won't run for office, man. I can't. I don't think I have patience for politics because you go in, I think you go in with this sort of rosary type of feel and everything's great and dandy. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that and watch me change the surroundings. And then you go in and you realize, man, can't do it. And you end up being, you know, becoming what you didn't want to become in the midst of all of that. So, but I do commend those that go into politics and they stay true to who they are. And I have to placate to, you know, if you don't agree with your party, say you don't agree with your party and still be able to do some things. I don't think it's like that anymore. You can't disagree with your party and them still, you know, think highly of you. The minute you don't agree with them, then all of a sudden they want to excommunicate you from the party. So I couldn't do it. I thought about it at one point in my after retiring, but then I'm like, man, I can't. It's just too much.
You thought about running for office after you retired?
At a smaller level.
Okay.
I had talked with a friend of mine who's sort of in those circles, and he and I had a conversation about it. I mean, it was sort of like a 10-year plan thing, but I'm like, man, that's not something that, because I know how I am, and if I'm passionate about something, I don't care which side I'm on, I'm going to speak loudly about it, and I'm not going to placate to, you know, someone or a group of people. So for that part, for that, you know, that alone, I'm like, nah, I can't. And it makes people ugly, man. It does. It just we've seen so much of it, so no.
Vote for Derek Mason. You're in good hands.
Oh, yeah. I will get. Hey, listen. How about that? You voted for me, I mean, I'm going to tell you straight up.
But I think you could be a Hallmark mayor.
But you see what I did there? Good hands.
Good hands.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure that that. Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
You could be on my team.
Okay. The only thing I can provide are puns. That's
the
only thing.
You have the analytics down. I know that for sure.
Not when it comes to politics. That's the one thing I don't have down. Eric is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Eric, let's hear your dad joke and your question.
Okay, here's my dad joke. D-Maze, I hope you like this. This is one I heard recently. You may or may not like this, so I'm just telling you up front.
Go ahead, Eric.
What has four legs and flies?
Four legs and fly? Man. Whew.
And flies.
And flies.
Yeah.
Four legs and flies, a horse. I guess.
Well, yeah, you got part of it—a horse in summertime.
Oh, I can. Oh, okay, I see that.
Because it's stinky.
Yeah, stinky and
stinky,
horse.
Stinky.
That's why I said a horse.
Yeah. You got it. You got it pretty much. Okay, my question is this: one of the things that I'm sure you guys probably discussed this yesterday was Gentry Ellis's comment column on the Titans yesterday. Open letter, amen, or strong, which I had no problem with. I didn't hear the whole letter, but I definitely heard excerpts of it. I've seen it. But then there was something else that I heard on another show that somebody threw out there, which I didn't think of, and I don't know if it would change their opinion or whatever. But one of the things they threw out was interesting. Of course, you had the COVID years a few years ago, and a lot of people wondered if COVID had happened, maybe some of the draft selection, maybe some of the decisions made would not have been made. Of course, we'll never know about that. But just wanted to get your guys' perspective on that, about COVID and some of the decisions were made, whether it was draft or whatever. Is, do you think that if COVID hadn't happened, some of the decisions that were made leading up to this may or may not have been made? And just wanted to get your thoughts about that, because a lot of people said if the decisions weren't made during COVID, maybe Robinson's not fired, maybe they make better draft selections. I don't know, because COVID may have hampered some of the ways they went about things and did on the decision making. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Guys, it's always good to talk to you. Take care. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Eric. So the drafts that would have been impacted by COVID, obviously 2020. I assume 2021 as well. Are those the two?
Yes, 20 and 21. Really 20?
Yes.
In 21, some of the restrictions started to be lifted as far as how you can see an individual, you can talk to them or whatnot. I think some of those restrictions.
I've tried to memory hole that entire period.
Yeah, period was just all muddy.
Yes. But, of course, in 2020, the Titans drafted Isaiah Wilson. They drafted Christian Fulton, Darrington Evans, among others. In 2021, it was led by Caleb Farley, then Dylan Radins, Monty Rice, Elijah Molden, Dez Fitzpatrick, Rashad Weaver, Racy McMath. So not a strong draft.
No contributors, really.
Yes, no. With the possible exception of Radins.
Yeah, Radins is one of the guys that's still contributing to this team. You know, to say it didn't affect teams, I think, would be disingenuous. I think, you know, it affected every team in some way. Now, others probably were able to navigate through it a little bit better, some organizations. But I do believe those 2 years affected every team in the National Football League. Hell, it affected every sport. We talked about how the, you know, the Predators talked about, you know, how it affected them, the whole, you know, COVID and everything in regards to how do you watch players and how you evaluate players and stuff like that. So I'm sure it hurt the Titans in some way. But we can't let that be an excuse for them because, you know, that's what, three, four years removed now. And you've had an opportunity, just like every other team has had an opportunity, to reassess some things, to reevaluate some things, and to try to make your roster better. I still believe that had the Titans hit on their quarterback now, they wouldn't have these problems that they're having. But because they didn't hit on that quarterback, and I don't think that has anything to do with the COVID years, but because they didn't hit on their quarterback, this is where they sit. I don't think it was so much about COVID and the flops that they had, because even with your flops, as a lot of other teams have, when they have that one guy underneath center, that cures a lot of the things that may go wrong. And that allows people to keep their job probably a little bit longer than what they deserve.
615-737-1025 will continue to take your calls and texts for Derek. We will do another segment of Ask D-Mace coming up next. So if you didn't get a question in now, you certainly can at 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingen, 1025-1063, The Game. D-Mace, Bingen, and Donick, 1025-1063, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingen here with you. We've got some more Ask D-Mace questions. If you want to get in on this, call us, text us, 615-737-1025. Matthew in Nashville says, Derek, as a Michigan State fan, what do you make of Ohio State's athletic director last night feeling compelled to release a statement to Ohio State fans asking them to stop selling their tickets to Tennessee fans so they don't have an orange horseshoe? Vols fans, including myself, will spend money to see our team play. Guess OSU doesn't want to make any money.
I guess not. I mean, listen, if you are asking, you know, your fan base to not sell your tickets, then do you really have a fan base? Is that a fan base that you've thought for so long that they were this loyal fan base? This is a playoff game. You shouldn't have to come out and say, don't sell your tickets to Tennessee fans. You shouldn't have to say that. Now, granted, listen, that's their ticket, and I'm sure they can get a pretty penny for it, but this is a college football playoff in the first ever 12-game college football playoffs where you can have a home game as one of your very first games. Why would you want to sell your tickets anyway? As a fan of Ohio State Buckeyes, why would you want to? Now, if you was Chris, I know why you would want to sell your tickets. But y'all not Chris, so why?
They didn't give him any tickets anyway.
Exactly, they didn't give him tickets anyway. But why would you, as an athletic director or president, feel the need to come out and tell people, you know, Ohio State fans and alumni, not to sell your tickets? You shouldn't have to say that.
I think there are posters outside of the horseshoe saying, do not let this man in, with a picture of Chris Sanders. Have you seen this man? Barred from the building.
Exactly. So.
So.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, AD, I understand why he's doing it. But, man, listen, this is the very first college playoff game ever in your building. Shouldn't you want to go as an Ohio State fan?
They're probably nervous.
You still should want to go, right? That's your team.
Through thick and thin, you should go. By the way, the Ohio State athletic director also said on Thursday that he is, quote-unquote, absolutely confident that Ryan Day will be back as the Buckeyes coach. So maybe they thought this would be the end of Ryan Day. And now that he's apparently not going to get fired if they lose, maybe they don't want to go anymore.
Yeah, that could be what they decided to do. But listen, college students, they're going to come no matter what because it's a big party for them. Absolutely. Especially if a team's good. I mean, they're going to come just to party.
Let's see here. Wes in Clarksville wants to know, Derek, what is the most favorite thing you were able to do with your family because of the fruits you received from the NFL?
To be there every day, to, you know, pick them up from school, and this is during the off season. The ability to pick them up from school every day, to drop them off every day, to watch practice, you know, those are some of the things that, you know, I cherish the most because, listen, just, you know, an everyday working family, it's hard for them to spend time with their family. Why? Because they're working so much to try to provide for their family. And I know there are countless amounts of dads and moms who wish they could just, you know, take a day off or a week off and be there with their kids, whether to pick them up, drop them off, go to a game, you know, go to a recital. But sometimes because of work, you can't do that because you have to work. But I was blessed to play a sport where, you know, it afforded me the ability for 3 months outside of my working out that I was there to take, you know, my son and daughter to school in the morning, that I picked them up from school, that I was able to watch their practices during those periods, those 3-4 months where we were not playing, more like 5 or 6. So that's the thing that I cherish the most, not being able to go on trips and stuff like that, even though that is great and his memories being built. But more than anything, you know, what you're doing, I've always said this, like picking kids up from school, you know, being there with them at practice, taking them to the barbershop, that stuff means a lot to them when they grow up and become adults. Because what they tend to do is replicate what you did and going to the barbershop. I loved going to the barbershop with DJ every week. He got to a point where was like, Dad, we don't need to go every week now. Let's go every 2 weeks. But I just love that time with he and I where we can go and he could be around the fellas and we can, you know, just talk barbershop stuff. And he was good with that. But then it came to a point where I was like, Dad, I want to be with my friends some of these Fridays. I want to have to rush to get a haircut. So it's just moments like that, or whether it was, you know, me going to pick my daughter up at school, sitting there with her at practice for the entirety of the practice, and then us driving home and talking about, you know, what went on or what happened at school.
Willie, I'm sure you and I both fondly remember the days where we needed to go to a barbershop. I haven't had to go to a barbershop.
Yep. It's been a while, I have to say.
I guess Derek as well.
Yeah, but it was more so for Derek than me. You know what? I got my beard trimmed, stuff like that. But it was more so, man, like,
camaraderie.
I wish, like, when I was young, because my parents worked their tails off. You know, my one worked in the morning, one worked in the evening. Sometimes both of them worked in the evening, just depending on their shifts. So I know how important it is when you can go to a barbershop with your son, or, you know, if you're a mom, you can go to a hairstylist with your daughter, and y'all just sit there. And it's just, you know, being in a barbershop is different, man. I wish I could have done that with my dad. When I was Derek's age, because I know that would have meant a lot to me. But, you know, we were under different circumstances and my parents had to work and all day, every day. So just moments like that, man, that means a lot.
Willie, I want to bring up a conversation that we started having yesterday before you joined the program. The heat has been turned up on Amy Adams Strunk, Gentry Estes of the Tennessean, wrote a column in the form of an open letter that circulated around quite a bit yesterday. I enjoyed the column from Gentry, but this has been a hot topic of conversation throughout town over the past several weeks. But I feel like it's ramped up over the past week or so about the lack of accountability from Amy Adams Strunk and the decision makers over at the Titans as compared to what we have been used to with the Predators, with Barry Trotz coming on our station every week, Sean Henry being a regular, making regular appearances on our station, answering questions on behalf of ownership. I'm curious where you stand on this issue that seems to be popping up.
I think we discussed this a few weeks ago in pretty good detail. And I would stay consistent with what I said back then.
I don't think Amy Adams Strunk is comfortable being a spokesperson. She certainly made some big decisions, and when she does, she has her way of sort of communicating with why she made the decision. But what I think is lacking is if you're not going to be like when you own the team, you don't have to be accountable. You can do whatever you want. And the people can decide whether you want to back an organization like that or not. So that's her prerogative as the owner. But I think it's smart. Most organizations who have an owner like that, you have an executive and you have a spokesperson who really can answer the questions that fans have, be out in front. And then you, on top of that, have a general manager that has chosen not to be in the forefront. I think that stings as well. So you have Brian Callahan on the island every week, a rookie, young head coach that's trying to find his way, that his first year has not gone great. He's had a lot thrown at him. And this is trial by fire for him. And he's got to be sitting there going, man, I got to answer all the questions every week. Where is everybody else? General manager doesn't answer a lot of questions. They don't have a Sean Henry type that is out there sort of giving the message. They don't have an ambassador. We've talked about somebody like a Jeff Fisher. In another world, maybe it would be an Eddie George if he weren't doing what he's doing now. But somebody like that who can take some of the heat off and be that person that makes the fans feel better about what they're selling. They have a big hole right there.
You know, look, we in the quote-unquote media, we tend to get accused of navel-gazing, you know, making things that are important to us, we try to make them important to everybody else. But I have noticed, Derek, that as this team has continued to struggle, and we played the clip from Charles Robinson yesterday when he was on with Robbie and Joe, I thought he nailed it with, you know, if Amy Adams Strunk is expecting Titans fans to pay the amount of money that it's going to cost to get a seat in the new stadium, you better be accessible. You better be accountable. And I remember Joe asked Charles, what's the upside if you're Amy Adams Strunk? To Willie's point, perhaps. Mm-hmm. What's the upside of having Amy Adams Strunk speak, especially if she is not a comfortable public speaker? And Charles's response was, well, you take that off the table. Well, she's not held accountable. She doesn't make herself accountable or accessible. You can take that off the table because at least she is making herself accountable and or accessible. But, you know, I'm very curious to see what the crowd is like this weekend. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not expecting a Vikings-level takeover from Cincinnati Bengals fans, but if the crowd is sparse or it's mostly Bengals fans, I mean, those are the images that get owners to act.
Well,
I think it'll be sparse and it will be a lot of Bengals fans. No. I think that's what the combination is going to be. I continue to say, if it's not the owner herself, that's fine. But you got to have somebody else. Like Sean Henry, and before him, it was a combination of Sean Henry and Jeff Kogan. When the ownership group for the Predators was together, you didn't see them out there having press conferences every week. They were largely in the backdrop. But they had people that understood how important that connection is. Feeling like the fan base is connected and they've got somebody they can bring their questions to. Who is that person for the Titans?
Well, they haven't. We would have assumed it was Rand Carthon and Brinker. But they're not out as much as people, as the fan base would like. See, when you're winning, they don't care if you're out or not, the fan base. But when there's some struggles and consistent struggles in your organization, that's when the fan base just wants to hear you say, it'll be okay, we're still with the process, this is how far along we are in the process. Yes, we've had some setbacks with injuries. You can even throw the injuries in there. We've had some setbacks, but we are still on task at what we were thinking at the beginning of the season. And we talked about this, you know, some years ago, Willie, that, listen, a lot of this that is happening is geared toward that stadium opening. Because the one thing you don't want to have, see, it worked out perfectly for a dad That was just lightning in a bottle. You got it, and it was just, it was good. Where the year we moved into the stadium was the year it was just like we just took off as a team. And ultimately, we found ourselves in the Super Bowl that very first year in Adelphia Stadium. We went 8-0 in that building. So we had set a mentality. We had set sort of a standard of being in that building and playing in that building. Right now, you don't have that. And that is what you want headed into the new stadium is, okay, the product on the field is good. So we're going to walk into that stadium, and everybody is going to be clamming through windows to try to get in. Right now, you can't pay nobody to take one of these high-priced seats. Or if you do, it's like, man, people are now really thinking, do I want to buy these seats? Because not only is the team bad, but no one has come out front to talk about really what's going on or reassure us. Just reassure us that everything is okay. Everything is still, the plan is still in place. We're still, you know, moving ahead. We may have taken a step back, but we're still moving ahead. But the plan is in place, and we feel good about it. Nobody has said that. And they made some really critical moves this season. And right before the season started with free agency, not signing Derrick Henry back. These are big decisions that you made, and nobody's really there to sort of help the fan base along as these decisions are being made and why you're not a good team.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, we didn't get to it in the last hour, so we'll do it next. I mentioned earlier that there is a quarterback who could potentially be available this offseason that I would stay away from personally. And we'll get to that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vinken, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.